I witnessed a near riot at a Starbucks recently. This particular Starbucks is located in Framingham near some big box stores. Maybe you have been to it too. I was there around 8 in the morning to wait for a few hours while my car was being serviced at the nearby dealership. When I entered the Starbucks, I noticed a dozen people waiting for their drink orders, while just a couple of people stood in line to order. I joined the line. Now, I know what a trap it is to order a fancy coffee drink at Starbucks. You can be as precise as you like in your order, but you're going to have to wait for someone else to make that special drink for you. So I just ordered black coffee, the size Starbucks calls a grande. In less than a minute, I had my coffee and went to sit at a table and start answering some emails that had piled up. As I sipped my coffee, more and more people came into the store. However, they didn't go up to the counter to order. They just milled around the barista, looking impatient. As the fancy coffee drinks came out slowly, one by one, the tension among the waiting crowd rose. People started to grumble. One woman asked why people in the line at the register were being served before her. And she clearly didn't like the answer she got. Then I realized most of the people waiting had ordered and paid for their coffee from their phones long before they entered the store. They expected the coffee drinks to be waiting for them. Quoting Dorothy Parker, in my head, I thought, what fresh hell is this? Starbucks had figured out a way to make their customers even more high-strung, demanding, and rude. Let people jump the line and then make them wait. It's brilliant. As the poor employees did their best, the crowd grew even more vocal. A couple of people stomped out of the shop without their coffee. Others said truly horrible things to the baristas. I was sad and embarrassed for my entire species. It is Starbucks' job to make a person feel special and unique. But no one in that store that morning was either of those things. What a flawed creation are we. Hail, thou that art highly favored, the Lord is with thee, proclaimed the angel Gabriel as he appeared to Mary, the mother of Jesus. Likely the first time in her life she ever heard words like these, Mary is dumbstruck. In what I might imagine was a terrifying moment for her, Mary kept her cool, though, and heard that angel out. A modern translation of the book of Luke puts it like this: Mary was thoroughly shaken, wondering what was behind a greeting like that. But the angel assured her, Mary, you have nothing to fear. God has a surprise for you. You will become pregnant and give birth to a son, and you will call his name Jesus. Mary, you have nothing to fear. For me, these are the most powerful words in the story. It would seem she had everything to fear. Young, unwed, a woman living in Roman-occupied Palestine, Mary had no power. She was not special or unique. She was the most unlikely recipient of an angel's visit. She was the most improbable person to accept the angel's proclamation. But there he was. Hail, thou that art highly favored, the Lord is with thee. Now set aside for a moment whether anything in the Christmas story happened or not. Imagine for a moment that Gabriel did visit Mary. Imagine for a moment a host of angels appeared to shepherds. Imagine for a moment that astronomers traveled from the east seeking a king. Imagine a rude stable and an improbable birth. Imagine that God really was born in human flesh. And then consider what this might mean for your own life, too. How might you be an incarnation? For as long as we are believing in angels, for a moment we can also believe Gabriel when he says, "Mary, you have nothing to fear." Because if Gabriel is right, then no harm will become either the mother or the child. If he is right, then no harm will become you or me either. I don't have to tell you that ours is a fear-soaked world. We are taught to fear from a very early age, and it is fear that keeps us from doing so many things. Fear keeps us from meeting other people. It delights in keeping our lives small and insulated. Fear spreads easiest where suspicion and greed thrive. And the most basic lesson of every religion in the world is that this life is but an illusion. This world is merely the outward husk to a rich inner life. All the world's religions, including Unitarian Universalism, urge their followers to look beyond the temporal, to the connective oneness of all things, to look beyond the particularities of time and place, to the universal holiness found everywhere. The greatest stumbling block to finding divinity within ourselves is fear, fear of that inner life, fear of one another, fear for our worldly goods, fear of losing our own lives. But the angel says, "Mary, you have nothing to fear." The story says she believed him. Can we? For me, the incarnation revealed in the Christmas story and in the stories that are like it in many other religious traditions reminds me that hope overcomes fear. It reminds me that humanity is not lost or damned, but redeemed and worthy and good. While human frailty makes us do all sorts of rotten things to each other and to our earth, we are not rotten ourselves, not even at Starbucks. Just the opposite. We are the very bearers of goodness. The love we carry within is a solvent strong enough to dissolve all hatred. It is a power great enough to vanquish evil. But we forget this, you and me. We forget and must be reminded over and over again that we too can be bearers of hope. As Joe mentioned, last Thursday, one of the greatest Unitarian Universalist lay leaders of our time died. Denny Davidoff slipped peacefully from this life after 85 years. Having found our faith in 1960 in the Unitarian Church of Westport, Connecticut, she joined that church in 1966 and began her long and powerful career in UU lay leadership. Various positions at church led her to being elected the president of the UU Women's Federation. This in turn led to her serving on the GA Planning Committee, the Meadville Lombard Theological School Board, and as a UUA trustee at large. In 1993, she was elected moderator of the General Assembly, the highest volunteer position in our denomination. She served capably as moderator until 2001. and any who were ever in her presence knew what a bright light Denny Davidoff was. She was fiercely interested in people. She was smart and funny and kind. She could hold her own in the biggest of crowds. And she could tell you no and make you still feel like you were on her team. Denny inspired a whole generation of young women to be leaders in their congregations and to become ministers in UU churches. We've got one right up here. She loved this faith. She loved the ways that Unitarian Universalism makes things better, just makes things better. She loved being a lay leader. In Denny Davidoff, love's incarnation was strong, and she was not a likely person to wield great power. But when asked, she said, "Here I am, send me." The very best thing I liked about Denny Davidoff was her ability to admit it when she was wrong. I've never seen anyone else accept constructive criticism as well as she did. She just let her mistakes roll off her back. It wasn't as if she didn't learn from her errors. She did. It was her ability to really know that ultimately, whatever she was doing was not about her. It was about the greater good. She was just the one who was trying to get it done in the imperfect human company that we call religious community. Denny could be corrected and not take it personally. She could realize when she had been too hard on someone and apologize. She could back away from a firmly held position amid a heated debate to really hear the other side. She was fierce, but she was never a bully. And if she lost the vote, she dusted herself off and tried to figure out how to make the decision work for everyone. A master at leading a meeting, Denny Davidoff never forgot that it was Unitarian Universalism that must thrive and grow. Though as a humanist, she would never put it this way, but I could see God's work shining through her. The story from the Bible tells us that after Mary's encounter with Gabriel, she went to visit her cousin Elizabeth, who was also pregnant. The two women embrace and then share their news. Elizabeth tells Mary how lucky she is and how wonderful it will be to have a child. But Mary's response is not the expected one. Knowing well the predictions of the Jewish prophets, the story puts Isaiah's words in Mary's mouth as she exclaims to Elizabeth, "I am bursting with good news. I am the most fortunate woman on earth. What God has done for me will never be forgotten. The God whose very name is holy and set apart from all others. God's mercy flows in wave after wave on those who are in awe before her. God bared her arm and showed her strength, scattering the bluffing braggarts. She knocked the tyrants off their high horses, pulled victims out of the mud. The starving poor sat down to a banquet. The callous rich were left out in the cold. God embraces her forgotten child Israel. She remembered and piled on the mercies, piled them on high. This is exactly what she promised, beginning with Abraham and right up to now." How differently might we live if we recognized the power and the goodness that we already have? How might we be changed by becoming agents of love? Theologian Kathleen Norris says, "For me, the incarnation is the place, if you will, where hope contends with fear. Not an antique doctrine at all, but reality, as ordinary as my everyday struggles with fears great and small, as exalted as the hope that allows me some measure of peace when I soldier on in the daily round. In the same way a great teacher can be born in a stable, you and I can find ourselves face to face with the holy in the most ordinary of places. For this world is real, and it is so much more than what we see. Behind life's puffed-up importance lie the things really worth noticing, the kindness complete strangers offer one another, the solidarity shared when we realize all oppressions really are linked, the forgiveness required to mend our human brokenness. The Christmas story tells us God came down to earth and took human form so that we might learn to love. Let us take the lesson of this story to heart. Let love come and live in us. So be it. Amen.